This week on Developer Weekly.
For me, data science is processing of data and finding patterns.
Now, before we start this episode, I want to ask you for a favor. Could you please go to ratethispodcast.com/developerweekly and rate this podcast and leave a review? This helps me to spread the word about the podcast and helps other people to find it. That is ratethispodcast.com/developerweekly. Thank you so much. Welcome to another episode of Developer Weekly. This week, I'm talking with Megan Bloemsma about data science. Megan is a data scientist working for Microsoft. Good to have you on the show, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Like we were just talking about before the podcast, in the Netherlands, where we both live, there is currently quite a heat wave going on. That's been going on for a week now, which is extraordinary, at least if you believe the weather institutes. But it's very, very hot, especially here in my little office here, where I do not have air conditioning. But
exactly.
Apart from that, I'm doing fine.
Yeah, and I'm lucky enough to be in a relatively cool apartment, so I'm very grateful for that, because yesterday I was talking to friends and colleagues, and it was like 30 plus degrees in their offices, so that's horrible.
That is horrible, yeah. That's just, you're sweating all day, you just can't concentrate. Mm-hmm. Takes it out of you. Yeah. So today we are going to talk about data science, because most of the listeners of this podcast are software developers. And some do things with data, and some know what data science is, others do not. So we're going to talk about what data science is, what a data scientist does all day, what kind of tools you use, and what you might be able to use in Azure, for instance. Mm-hmm. But first, I want to get into the topic of you for a moment, as in, how did you first get into data science?
Well, I've had a not very linear path to data science. In fact, I studied social sciences first. I thought I wanted to be a sociologist, but it turned out that although I wasn't very good at it, I liked the math most. And growing up, my dad always taught me how to build computers, so I was always very into computers. But for some reason, it never really clicked until I had to, I finished up my bachelor's degree at uni and I was choosing my master's, and I had the realization that I wanted to step away from social sciences and do something more with the math. I absolutely love puzzling. I love getting a chaotic problem and having to sort it out and figure out how it works. And by luck, data science came on my path, and I made a major switch and did a master's in data science, which I can tell you is quite a challenge when you've never programmed before and you need to learn how to program, and you all of a sudden need to dig a little bit into the infrastructure of cloud and computers and everything. But I'm still super happy I made that change. So I finished up my master's, took a little longer than what was planned, but again, took me a little while to adjust to learning how to program. And then immediately from my master's on, I started working at Microsoft.
Ah, well, Microsoft the Netherlands, that is then.
Oh, that's a complicated question because yes, Microsoft Netherlands, but until last July, I was in a Microsoft Western Europe team. So it gets confusing, but yeah, I live in the Netherlands and I work for Microsoft. So let's say it like that.
Right. Because nowadays, the new Microsoft, people can work from wherever, right? Doesn't really matter where you live.
Yes, indeed. So I was also very lucky that when COVID hit, I was already very used to working from home. I was already working from home 2 to 3 days a week. That being said, I've been working home now since February, which is quite long. But yeah, we're very used to working from home and working anywhere we want, basically. We do have a Dutch office at Schiphol, but since I live in Eindhoven, I'm never there. It's too long of a trip. And unless there's something specific for me that I need to be there, I'd rather either be at the companies that I work with or work from home.
Totally understand. That's quite a commute. I know that commute. That's a long, long time. So you are you a bit of a math wizard then?
I wish. I love the solving of things. So I love getting a complicated problem and going from not understanding what is happening at all to coming up with a solution. But I would not call myself a math wizard because it does, you know, it costs me a lot of energy and a lot of brain power to actually make something out of it.
Right. And in your education, did you get a lot of statistics?
Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of statistics, a lot of mathematical models. And I think that's one of the things that people tend to underestimate in data science. Data science, and we'll talk about it, but it's been hyped enormously. I get a lot of messages of people asking me, I want to do data science as well. Where do I start? And I'm not saying it's rocket science at all, but once you really dig into it, there is actually quite a lot of math involved, which, you know, I think is really fun. It's a nice challenge, but it is a challenge.
Right. So a lot of statistics. Let's just define what that then actually is and how that differs from maths. So what is statistics?
What is statistics or what is data science?
What is statistics? Let's start with that one.
Statistics, I think, originally is more towards calculating probabilities and calculating the chances of something happening, which in data science we tend to use to calculate how accurate your model actually is.
Ah, okay. So that's a great segue to get into data science. Well, you talked about a model already, but let's take a step back. And like you said, people tend to think that they know what data science is, and there are lots of hype words around it and hype definitions around it. Maybe we can debunk some of those and clarify things. So in a big picture, what is data science?
It really depends on who you ask. For me personally, data science is the processing of data and trying to find patterns in it. That being said, because data science has gained so much popularity over the last years, I think it has been giving a lot of meanings. For some companies, data science is building a custom code algorithm and having it perform something. For other companies, data science is a Power BI dashboard. So it really varies. But for me, data science is processing of data and finding patterns.
Right. And there you said the word algorithm again, and we also had model. Mm-hmm. So those things are terms that come up when you talk about artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Right. So what is then artificial intelligence, and how does that differ, or how does that work with models and algorithms?
I always tend to describe artificial intelligence as a bomb sniffing dog. So the dogs that you have at the airport that smell your suitcases just to make sure you don't have any weird things on you. I always describe AI like that because how it works for the dog is the dog doesn't actually know what a bomb is or doesn't actually know what drugs are. You teach the dog that when it smells a certain scent, it will bark and it gets a cookie. That's all that dog knows. And actually, it's kind of the same for artificial intelligence. So you need to teach the AI algorithm or the AI model what it needs to do. So people tend to think that AI is kind of a magic black box that will perform whatever you want with it, and it will make you lots of money, and you never need to maintain it, etc. But algorithm is actually... It is a mathematical model at the end of the day that you've taught to do something. So to give you an example, AI can do, for example, classification. So you can show it a lot of images of fruit and you can say, this is an apple and this is a strawberry. But you do need to teach the AI what the apple is by literally showing the picture and classifying it first yourself as this is an apple. And this is a strawberry. And then later on, you can kind of test to see how well the machine understood the differences. And that's where you get the accuracy. So you can, for example, say my model has an accuracy of 80%, which means that in 80% of the cases, the model is able to correctly classify between an apple and a strawberry.
Right. So that's then machine learning, right?
All these terms, data science, machine learning, artificial intelligence, I think if you look at it officially, They're all kind of subsets of each other. So machine learning is a subset of artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is a subset of data science. But this is where it gets a little bit complicated, right? Because there are so many varieties of how you do things. And what I've just described of literally having to train the model is what we call reinforced learning. But the field is developing incredibly fast. So we're even being able to develop models now that can teach themselves how to do things. They might not do it very well yet, at least in a lot of cases. There's a whole facet of ethics that you need to take in there. And also there's still a lot we need to learn. So it's moving very quickly. But as I said, I think officially, like machine learning is a subset of AI and data science is a subset, or AI is a subset of data science. So it's all connected.
Right. Let me see if I then understand that correctly. So AI is then a capability. Let's say that dog sniffing a suitcase and predicting that there is drugs in there or there isn't. Mm-hmm. And he gets his capabilities by training on data, on big data sets, which we then call machine learning. And there are various ways of machine learning, automated and classification and you name it. Those are then the algorithms that machine learning uses to train on the data and get those capabilities. And you, as a data scientist, then use the capabilities of machine learning, for instance, as a tool to get information out of your big data sets, right? And then the output could be AI. Is that correct?
I have to be honest, I lost you halfway through the conversation, but it shows exactly how complicated this is, right? I think the easy way of looking at it is that as a data scientist, I mean, the first role you have is getting the data and cleaning it and pre-processing it, which actually takes about 80% of any project. And then when we come to the AI space, you as a data scientist, in a way, you're a teacher to the model. So you're training the model to do certain things. And at the same time, you're also the one grading the model. So you're the one, say, teaching the model to do something, but also grading it on how well or how bad it's doing that.
But do you always use machine learning or AI? Because that's just a tool, right, to get something out of your data. Are there other tools that you could use?
There are many, many tools. Machine learning is one of them. Kind of the next step of that is deep learning, which has popped up for the last years. And I think TensorFlow is kind of the big term or the big tool when we're talking about deep learning. But I think for me, it's not necessarily about, you know, what is the correct term or what are we using it for. It's really about going back to the basics as a data scientist and asking, what do we actually want to do with this data?
Yes.
And this is also where the confusion starts. So as I said, data science for some companies, it's a Power BI dashboard. And I think in a lot of cases, that's absolutely fine. Because if as a data scientist, the problem that you're facing is readability of data or just getting insights into data, a dashboard is a perfectly good solution for that. Is it data science? I mean, that's debatable, but I don't really think it matters because at the end of the day, it's your job to solve a problem. And you can do that with a dashboard. You might need machine learning. You might even need deep learning. But there are many ways you can go about it.
Right. So let's then take an example, because that's a very good example. Let's say a company calls you and hires you. Hey, Microsoft, can we get you to create a Power BI dashboard of all of our data that we have here, of information that is hidden within that data? You go to the client, you get access to their extremely large data set. Mm-hmm. What do you do next?
Start cleaning and pre-processing the data. And that means taking a look at the data, understanding what variables are in there. Are there maybe missing variables? So something that tends to happen is that you measure something, but it either stops measuring that certain variable or it doesn't measure it all the time. So before that data set is ready to be put in any model or to be visualized, there's always some cleaning that needs to happen. And it always sounds like such an easy step, right? But this takes 80% of the project on average.
Wow. So just that's just getting data right let's say somebody has a name and address data in a table of a database, then sometimes the name is in the street column or something.
Exactly. Or maybe there turns out that there's 10 columns for address just spelled differently.
Oh, right.
And especially, like, usually it's not one big data set you're working with, right? Usually it's 5 to 10 or maybe even 100 or 500 data sets you're working with that you need to merge together somehow to get that information out. And even when the cleaning is done, you need to ask yourself the question, in order to make this dashboard, do I need all the data that is in there, or do I maybe create a subset of it?
That sounds like quite a puzzle.
And it's that also means that you... puzzle.
You love that, of course.
I love it, yeah.
So that also means that you need to understand the data, right?
Exactly. And this is something that's also underestimated often. And something that I try to teach the companies that I work with as well is, especially if you're trying to create some kind of model that needs to forecast, so that needs to predict things, I think it's always very important to get some domain experts in. So if I'm working on a data set that has, for example, Formula One racing data in there, my boyfriend might watch it, but I have no clue what those cars do. So I can clean it, I can get the missing variables out, I can maybe even create a subset. But at some point, I will need an expert or somebody who knows what the data actually means to tell me, why is it important to include, I don't know, how much oil is in a car. I have no clue. But this is why I need the help, right? So it's also, it's never a solo project where you have the magical unicorn wizard data scientist that can do everything. There's always, you need to, as you said, you need to understand what's in the data. And that's where you need help as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're starting probably to see how these projects get complicated, right?
Oh, yeah, I can definitely imagine how this can be very, very complicated, especially when you are working with lots of data and, like you said, many different data sets. So how do you go about merging and cleaning those? What kind of tools do you use?
There's different ways you can go about it. I think within the data science field, we use the programming languages Python and R most, where R is usually used more in the academic setting or people from an academic background, and Python. I mean, Python is also an easier language to learn, but those are the tools that we use to start cleaning everything at the basis. But that being said, like, technology is going so incredibly fast that there's a lot of out-of-the-box tools available. And even it's not necessarily for you to build an if you're going to build an algorithm, you don't need to build it from scratch anymore. There's a lot of out-of-the-box AI available. So definitely don't reinvent the wheel, but look around at what's there to help you, because that will cut down your time tremendously.
Wow. So let's say that they give you a big SQL Server database. How do you use Python on that?
That's a good question. Something that's being used, at least, you know, I'm working for Microsoft, so I'm always thinking and I have more experience with the from the cloud perspective. And there's something that's used a lot is notebooks, especially Jupyter notebooks, which are kind of like small environments where you can build your code, but that connects to everything in the cloud. So there you can say you connect to that SQL Server information and you get it in your notebook and from there start working.
Ah, all right. So you use different tools then to connect that data to your programming environment, let's say.
Yeah.
Right. And do you also use old school Excel?
Well, if you're working with a lot of data, like 500 data sets, Excel gets a little bit limiting. So you can always try, but I'm pretty sure the program won't be able to handle that very well.
Ah, right. Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I've tried that once where I had a project where they said, well, this is our big data set of a gigabyte of relational data. And they told me to get some information out of that. I tried to load that in Excel, actually, which kind of worked. My computer almost crashed constantly. whenever I did anything, like remove a column or add something, I just needed to wait a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I remember when I was doing my thesis for my master's data science, and I was running everything locally because at uni, they didn't ever teach me about the cloud. So I had the data locally and I was running it in RStudio. It's the programming tool you use for R. And I remember when I would run my code, I'd like have to make sure the laptop wouldn't go on standby because it would take at least 3 to 5 hours. And if I was unlucky, the whole night. And then you were just hoping that there were no faults in your code and everything would run smoothly. So the day after, you could take the next step in your research.
So these cleaning tasks, these algorithms that you run as well, and also tools that you use and like little scripts that you probably run to clean data or to merge it, those can take a long time to run, can't they?
Locally, definitely, yeah. But I mean, nowadays you also have, I'm not sure what the correct term is anymore, but it's like parallel computing. So you have parallel a lot of compute running just to get through it. So if you're doing it on any cloud, it usually tends to go a lot faster. So there are definitely ways to go smart about this, which, you know, as a data scientist, this is more the infra side of things. So it takes a little bit of figuring out, but it's definitely possible to make it run faster.
Right. But that sounds expensive because it sounds like you need a lot of compute power.
Yeah, if you're working with a lot of data, you're going to need at some point some compute power to go through it.
Right. Is it usually worth it for the client?
Yes, because if you do not have workable data, you can't go anywhere in the data science project. So it's essential, unfortunately.
Yeah, so it's important to the client that you can actually continue your work. But what I actually meant to ask is it worth it to the client, the outcomes of your big data project? Is that so valuable usually that easily merits the costs of the huge compute?
I think that if there's one thing we're learning and that we've learned for the last years is that data is definitely worth a lot. And to have control of the data in your company is also worth a lot. Data science projects themselves, and then I'm more specifically talking about building a machine learning algorithm, for example, it's difficult to estimate whether it will bring value. Usually it does, but there's no way, and this is the difficult part of kind of the ROI on data science. You can never tell for sure if your model is going to perform the way you were expecting, if it's going to deliver the value you were expecting. So, you know, personally, I always think that it does have value because you'll learn so much about your data and you'll always have lessons to learn about what's in your data. But there's not the guarantee that, for example, if I'm building a prediction model if I'm a retail company and I'm predicting how much money my customer will spend on their next order, and it turns out that model isn't accurate enough, so the model is actually not reliable, then maybe the investment you made in that model is not directly returned. But the investment you made into understanding your data and getting the data organized is definitely worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. I can totally imagine that because the data is your gold as a company, of course.
It is.
If you understand that, then you can actually derive more information from it and use it more efficiently and effectively.
Exactly.
All right. So you already talked a little bit about the infrastructure, as in you use stuff in the cloud usually, because there you have a lot of compute power. What kind of services do you use? And then in Azure for data science?
I think there's kind of two sides of this. The first one is the infrastructure things you use on Azure. And that really depends also on, it doesn't just depend on the data science side where you're storing that on the infra perspective, right? For data scientists, as long as they have some kind of access to that data, it's usually fine. However, on the data science perspective of things, there is a lot of tools that you can use. And this is where it gets really interesting. Because our discussion so far, you notice that things can get pretty complicated pretty fast with data science. But what we're really seeing, and this is not just on Azure, this is also on GCP, this is also on AWS, this is on basically with any big tech giant. is that we're making data science much more accessible also to non-data scientists. So this means that we also have pre-built AI models. So this means it's usually in the form of an API where you send your data to, and that is the black box that will run the model for you and make the prediction or the categorization for you, and it will just give you the output, which, it doesn't work in every scenario, but definitely usually for the more low-hanging fruit projects where you just want to see if there's any value in your data, these are super useful.
Right. And those are then the cognitive services, right, in Azure?
Yeah, the cognitive services, we have them for anything from images to text to even voice to text. But that's kind of the pre-built AI in its basis. And then if you want to take the next step, we have something called Azure ML, which is at the end of the day more of a workspace for your data scientists. But what's really cool is that in there we have something called AutoML. And even like for a data scientist, I find this super exciting because AutoML, what that does is you also give it the data and it will parallel check several mathematical models, so several algorithms for you to see which one works best. Because in data science, even if when you have the data and it's been cleaned, and let's say we still want to do the categorization of the apple and the strawberry, there's usually multiple mathematical models you can choose from. And all of those will give an accuracy, so how good your model works, but those accuracies can vary. So there's also a lot of time that goes in just going through all those mathematical models and checking which one works best, and from there taking the next step in your project. And what AutoML in Azure ML does is it parallel checks all of those math models for you, so you can much more quickly see, okay, I need to go with model B because that accuracy is 3% higher than the other ones.
Ah, that is very clever. I didn't
very
know
clever.
That it existed. Very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And what about Hadoop in Azure? I always see this Hadoop cluster. I don't really know what it does. Do you use that?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I haven't seen that many companies that I work with use it, but that's also because it's quite expensive to run. If you run a Hadoop cluster, it can run up to $10,000 a day. Again, if you need that kind of compute, then it's a really nice tool because it can work for you fast and it can do really cool stuff. But it isn't more, as I said, it's quite expensive. So usually people try to figure out other ways to work with their data before resorting to Hadoop, for example.
Ah, so that is also a way to process and clean your data and work with models, but then an expensive way with lots of compute.
I don't think it's fair to say it that way because, I mean, and again, this is where it gets complicated. Depending on the task that you're trying to do, there's a lot of options for tools on a lot of different clouds and a lot of things. There's always the right fit for your project. It's just a little bit about what you want to do. So it's complicated to sell it, to just give it like a flat answer like that.
Right. So it depends on what kind of tools you use and what kind of problems you're trying to solve, right?
As always in tech, the answer is it depends.
Oh, terrible. Okay. Well, that is very interesting. I think we found out what data science is and what you do all day, which is mostly cleaning the data. Doesn't that get boring?
Again, I love the puzzling of it, so I don't mind at all. But I mean, again, this is the work of what a data scientist does mostly. But there's what you also see now is in the field that they're kind of splitting out data scientists in different roles. So you have a data wrangler, which is more preoccupied with the cleaning and the processing of the data. But again, there's also a lot of out-of-the-box AI tools. So I know that this podcast is more geared towards developers, and we do have ML.net, which is, again, like almost it's a pre-built AI model that you can use with your .NET code to do the AI for you, with the downside that it is a little bit of a black box. So if you really want to know what's happening, it's kind of difficult to retract that. But on the other hand, if you are experimenting with AI or you just want to see what's in your data or you want to start finding some patterns, it's a really great way to get started.
Ah, yes. Lots of tools. And so the field is in constant motion and certainly in development. Like you said, now there's splitting out the roles as well, and the tools are constantly evolving, where we have AI out of the box and algorithms out of the box. So if somebody wanted to start in the data science field and maybe want to become a data scientist or a data wrangler or whatever roles there are, where could they start to learn about this stuff?
There are so many good resources for this. If you're really wanting to learn to be a data scientist, like from scratch and then also cloud agnostic, I would really recommend DataCamp. So that's datacamp.com, because they can take you kind of from the zero to hero. If you're already in tech and you're either a developer or you're already familiar a little bit more with the tech side of things, in the Microsoft tech community, there's a really great blog called A Developer's Introduction to Data Science, which will kind of take you through the steps you can take. And as always, we have this website called Channel 9. And if you just look there on either the terms data science or ML or AI, or as I said, ML.net, if you're a .NET developer, there's also some really great resources there, which will take you through everything.
That is great advice. So I think we're at the end of our episode. I will link to all of those resources that you just mentioned in the show notes so that people can look them up and start learning about data science. Thank you very much for explaining all this stuff to me today.
Thank you for having me. I can talk about this stuff for hours, so you know how to find me.
Yes, we might follow up for another deep dive into any of these topics. So thank you very much, and see you next week for another episode of Developer Weekly. This episode is brought to you by me. If you like this show and you want to support it, please visit my courses on Pluralsight and buy my new book, 200 Things Developers Should Know, which is about programming, career, troubleshooting, dealing with managers, health, and much more. You can find my Pluralsight courses and the book over at www.developerweeklypodcast.com/about. That is www.developerweeklypodcast.com/about.